great things.
His name is Thobo Katola. Am I pronouncing it properly?
Perfect,
Thobo.
Perfect.
Yeah, beautiful name there. And founder and CEO of The Lion Tutoring. Welcome, my brother. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Tell me about The Lion Tutoring International. What is that all about?
Thank you, Bra Obza, for having me on the program. So basically, I founded Lion Tutoring in 2015. As it was mentioned, I was a student at the University of Pretoria. Studying actuarial science.
Oh, Sangoma, yeah?
And then I went into business. Right. Yeah, it was hectic. So I ended up graduating in entrepreneurship, in business management. But the long short of it is I had to take a job as a student because my parents were paying for my fees. And, you know, the least I could do was also just try to help out.
Sure.
So I got employed by the university. I also got employed by a big tutoring institute here in South Africa, and I was one of their tutors for I worked for them for 3 years.
Yeah.
And that is where I basically just got the whole, introduced to the whole tutoring game. And when I...
So you were a Tux, huh?
I was a Tux. Tux
yeah,
of Nux.
I'm a Tux alumni too. Tux of Nux,
Tux
my bro.
Of Nux.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's basically where it all started. And, when I graduated, you know, the South African problem of unemployment.
Sure.
I was unemployed and I had to make a plan. So I just reached into the wealth of knowledge that I have as a tutor, and I started my own company. And today we hire 300 young people.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I remember my days at Tux many, many years ago. Koleravi.
Yeah.
At the Omerensky.
Omerensky, yeah.
The Chelsea Ban. And the Buddy Cook. I don't know. Did you guys have
same
that?
Experience? Same experience. Yeah, because you know, once you have that Chelsea Ban, it takes you through 5-6 lectures.
Absolutely,
you
know? Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the conversations that we would have as students, as youngsters, as ourselves, would be where to from here?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what that did to me is that when those answers weren't answered, those questions weren't answered about what do we do when we leave here with whatever qualification we have, because that wasn't very clear. It wasn't really clear. And I imagine that's the experience of many young people at universities, even to this day, that sure, we'll get this qualification. It might not be entirely clear as to where you go with that thing. And many conversations with students, with lecturers around that issue as to where we were going, became very, very scary for some of us. Yeah. Really, very, very scary for some of us.
Mm.
Guys that were qualified in 2, 3, 4 degrees were still languishing on campus trying to get another degree, another qualification, and jobs weren't there.
Yeah.
And I imagine that is the reality of many students even to this day.
Yeah.
When you were studying, what made you decide to go for actuarial studies? I asked that question because you would have gotten a job immediately, most probably.
Yeah, I could have. And I was actually a very good student in terms of maths and sciences. And I just got into the mood of things, and you know, that really wasn't my passion. But there was this narrative that if you do a certain course, you'll definitely go
get a job.
I mean,
actuarial sciences.
Yeah.
Even now, I imagine that is a critical skill that is still required by most, particularly insurance industries, right?
Absolutely.
So why did you stop, man?
Well, the to be honest with you, the course was really difficult.
Right.
And just going in with the hype wasn't enough to keep sustaining me, to fuel me, to spend those sleepless nights, until I got into a course that I was really
resonating with,
you know, business studies. I did really well in business studies in high school, although I went into maths and sciences. But that is one area that I sort of neglected.
Yeah.
And, just education, you just that passion of education, seeing how students' eyes light up when they finally get a concept that you've been explaining to them. That is what really gets the sparkle in my eye.
And
you know, years later, it makes sense. I mean, blood, sweat, and tears. But right now, looking at the impact that we're making, I think this is really where God wanted me to be.
Sure.
Because the impact that we're making supersedes if I had just got my actuarial science degree.
You've just mentioned something that I think is critical, that we need to be clear about why we take certain courses.
Yeah.
Many of us took certain courses, as you say, because of the hype.
No.
Because of the hype that not only was amongst us as students, but because we were told, yeah, this one, it's a very difficult course.
Yeah.
If you get this course right, you are going to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you're saying to me that you must study that which truly resonates with you.
Absolutely.
Regardless of your ability sometimes in the course that is given to you because of the hype, wherever the hype is coming from, yeah. Whether it's coming from your friends, your peers, or whether mom it's coming dad. From the mom and dad, yeah. Mom and dad, oh, mom and
yeah.
dad, regardless of whether it comes from the commercial world that says, ah, you know, if you get this course, then you're most definitely going to get a job or not.
Yeah.
You speak about the fact that it just didn't work for you. It was difficult. It was laborious. It was a...
Yeah.
What was the course that you started to click with?
It was the, you know, with business studies and economics.
Yeah.
Obviously, all the courses you have to work hard.
Sure.
But these came so naturally.
Yeah.
You know, I would study for hours and not even, and think just an hour has passed by. But
yeah.
I've been there for hours at the Merensky, you know, at the library.
At the old Merensky.
You know, I'd be there for hours and time would pass. And there are certain courses that it just so felt so forced.
Laborious.
Laborious.
No, I hear
you
what
know.
You're saying, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that is where the distinguish came. And that is what we really try to help
students.
Why
did those courses speak to you?
Economics and business.
Yeah.
It was so interesting. And you know, sometimes we can even rope it back to that one or two lectures that you, lecturers that you have that would make the course so interesting. And you know, the same with what we do with our students. There would be that one lecturer that would explain it so granular and it makes so much sense and just reignite
yeah.
that
yeah.
passion with,
yeah.
within you. And trust me, once you have that passion, you're set for life. And, you know, most of the times we do it because of our parents. You
yeah.
know, my mom wanted to be a doctor and she didn't. And she wants me to go into medicine. But I'm probably a chef. You know, I'm probably more excited by, you know, mixing foods and, you know, the culinary arts.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that is one of the areas that we try to help our students with.
And it's true. I mean, we sometimes do the very unfair thing as parents that we want to live vicariously through our children. That
yeah.
which we didn't achieve as youngsters, we want our children to achieve on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And very often we need to be reminded that, you know, those lives are not ours.
Yeah.
We've lived our lives. We're living our lives as it has unfolded. We can't force our desires of how our lives should have turned out, maybe academically or vocationally, on our children. Our children have their own path to follow, yeah?
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing for parents.
Mm.
Are you a parent?
I am a parent.
Yeah?
I'm a parent of two beautiful daughters.
Yeah.
And we find these things out as we go. You know,
sure.
as we are parenting, you get that light bulb moment to say, I think I'm unconsciously perpetuating a certain career. And you know, God has been good to us. God has blessed us with the resources
yeah.
to be able to take our kids to better, for better opportunities than we had ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think this generation, we need to really be able to spot the talent, to be able to spot, you know, what brings a sparkle to your child's eye. And sometimes it's something that is even foreign to what we believe. Let me give an example,
yeah.
Bra Obza. I have a student who wanted to do DJing, and the whole family, from the grandmom to the parents, they didn't understand, and they were so
yeah, I must have something to fall back onto.
Exactly.
King DJ,
yeah, you know.
Yeah.
But immediately once I had a conversation with the whole family to say these are their careers around sound engineering. Absolutely. This can be a profession. The students started performing well in math and physics because I showed them to be a sound engineer, you need to understand how maths, how these programs that you're going to be using, these softwares that you're going to be using.
Yeah.
His maths and physics grade went up.
Wow.
And by the time he graduated his IEB, he now outgrew the DJ
thing. Yeah.
He's a medical student now.
Well, it's a very interesting story that you're telling me now, because I remember also a similar story. You know how it goes after the funeral.
Yeah.
Or after when they call, you know, at the family once there's a function.
Yeah.
After the funeral or the wedding, then they call certain family members. They come and then they have a meeting about certain things.
Mm.
And usually it's to try and introduce members of the family that might not know each other. Maybe you've got a cousin that has come from Swaziland or from wherever.
Yeah.
And they say, you guys might not know this, but you're relatives. You know what I mean? Anyway, but it was at this particular meeting in my family where there was a youngster who wanted to be a designer, clothing designer.
Oh.
Ish. And the elders were having this conversation. They said, you know, we've paid so much money for this young man to go to school, and he wants to be a dressmaker.
Ah, it's African. Yo, what a dressmaker. not even
Taylor. I had to jump in and say, whoa.
Yeah.
This guy wants to be a designer, not a dressmaker. But yeah, umzana lo simbathelele ufuna ba dressmaker. And so it's true. It's true that sometimes we do need to explain these things to our families to say, listen, there's another level to this idea that you have. It's not just, of course. Today, is he not going to sew? I said, there's going to be some sew. Yeah, I know that it's dressmaking. I said, no. They're listening right now. They can be a problem. So it's true what you're saying. That sometimes we need to bring generations before us into understanding the complexities of the options that now exist.
Yeah.
Because true, they come from a time when maybe options were more limited.
Yeah.
And now options are a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Then I want to ask you another question before we go into your work at Lion Tutoring International.
Yes, sir.
You said a very interesting thing about how a particular teacher or a particular lecturer can just bring a particular subject to life and make a student or a learner just connect with the content.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also said that there were just certain subjects that just didn't speak to you.
Yeah.
You just didn't feel, when you engaged them, they were laborious, they were tiring, they were... And you could do those subjects that you loved for hours and not even feel that time goes.
Mm.
Do you think that a student or a learner connects with content because of the teacher or in spite of the teacher?
Okay, both are correct. And I've seen it personally in my life, and I see it day to day with our students, that sometimes a student, you know, the damage that one bad teacher can make to a student's life, it's really difficult to undo the damage and get the student reignited. I'll give you an example. There's students who typically have problems with mathematics.
Yes.
And they usually quickly switch from mathematics to maths literacy. And maths literacy is considered the easier subject, the low-lying fruit. But you'd find that
we used to call it standard grade.
Standard grade maths, And we're relegating students into that maths literacy because the teacher would come and sort of make it so impossible for student, except for these group of students, to go for the the mathematics, that he really doesn't do his job, or she really doesn't do her job of getting the students excited. Yes, of course, we're not all born for maths.
Yeah.
But as you say, in spite and despite, there are many careers that we end up getting into because of that one negative. And as a tutor, we feel, you know, we're here to undo the damage that was caused and give a student a level playing field to say, you discover for yourself which is the subject that you're strong in, despite the negative feedback you've got from X and Y teacher at a lower grade.
Sure. And let's go into Lion Tutoring International. Mm-hmm. What do you guys do?
So basically what we do is we offer private tutorial sessions for students at their homes. And we have an app which is like Uber for tutors. And this app, because of obviously AI, we are able to match students to the right tutors, looking at competence, looking at locality, and also looking at personality. There are some students who are sanguine. There are some students who are choleric. Even the tutors, vice versa. So our app actually has a way of matching the right tutor to the right student. So that's basically what we do, just to keep it simple. And we also do community projects. Like it said, you know, we've worked with companies like your FNB through the FNB Foundation, where they'll deploy us into a school and say, these 300 students, we want you guys to take them through and prepare them for the exams. So we have also those community-based projects. So we're basically just educators.
What do you... I love the idea of one-on-one stuff. I wish we could all afford it.
Yeah.
Because I think in that relationship, a one-on-one relationship, and in fact, way before this industrial way of teaching happened, you know, where you've got 40, 50 children in a classroom and one teacher, way before that happened, teaching was one-on-one.
It was.
It was your father that taught you how to milk a cow.
Yeah.
You know, one-on-one. It was it was your grandmother who taught you how to knead the dough or be a dressmaker. But I honestly believe that the original intent of the teaching process was, in fact, one-on-one, because it's a very intimate process. Mm. It's a very, very, very intimate process.
Yeah.
And, of course, the industrial age then gave us reason to churn out people en masse, right? Because we were now churning out things en masse, So I honestly believe that the teaching process actually is supposed to be master and student.
Yes.
One-on-one.
Yeah.
You know how the Chinese say that when the student is ready, not the students.
Student, yeah.
When the student is ready, then the teacher will appear. And I honestly believe that it should actually be one-on-one. Yeah. Because then you really get it. Right?
Yeah. You see, Obza, if you look at some of the countries that are doing very well globally, you look at your Singaporean kind of teaching style, they have a lot of that apprenticeship after school.
Yep.
So they would have students in a group, as is the global trend.
Right.
But it's mandatory that a student meets with a tutor, either still at the institution or back home. So it's a very common practice that you would have a private tutor after school come for an hour or two and help that student with the work, unpack the work they did at school. And it's so intimate, and I feel no student should be able to fall back on their work, because right now, I've been a teacher, I've been an assistant lecturer, I've been a teacher, and I see, and I know that there's temptation to work with the students that want to work.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, my KPI is going to be, how many, what's the pass rate?
Yeah.
So I can quickly say my pass rate is 70%, but out of that 70%, maybe 10% of my students absolutely failed.
Yeah.
So I feel with that kind of program, no student should be left behind, because some of these kids, they have learning disabilities. They have your autism, epilepsy, ADHD. They are not your average student, and your average teaching methods in a group setup won't work for them.
Yeah. So the model is one that tries to get one-on-one sort of attention. And I love the fact that you are highlighting the fact that the propensity, the easy thing to gravitate towards to as a teacher is to teach those children that, or those students, or learners, not, no longer just children, or learners that want to learn, yeah. that are interested. Mm. They're the easiest ones to teach.
Yeah, yeah.
But those ones that have problems, those ones that might not be inspired, that those are the ones where the teacher comes into their own. Yeah. How do you deal with those learners? And by the way, which subjects, at which levels do you teach?
Yeah, so our programs start all the way from grade R to your master's.
Okay.
So we even have research assistants at your universities. I remember I actually had this unique student who was a PhD student, but the statistical software that they used back then has been taken out. So now they're using the latest MATLAB SPSS. And actually some of our tutors were able to help him to put his data into the computer and obviously work throughout those mathematical softwares. So those are some of the students that we're tutoring. You know, we go all the way from primary to tertiary levels. All subjects, your English, Afrikaans, Zulu, Sepedi, maths, sciences, maths literacy, even odd subjects like French, you know, we have tutors in that. And and different curricula also, IEB, IGCSE, A-levels, you know, the Cambridge and the CAPS, you know, the ones that they do at the public schools private schools.
And what are some of the biggest challenges, at least from your side as tutors for children? I mean, you've just mentioned one of them, that those kids that and learners, and students that might not be interested, right? That's I imagine. How do you overcome that?
Yeah, so with so all of these things are, the good thing is as we are in business, we are also learning the different challenges, and we always come up with solutions. So the one solution that we have is psychometric tests. So we have this nice platform that has been developed by an educational psychologist that a student will go over. Then it will give them the careers that they seem to be naturally gifted in. And most of the students, actually, that is an ice-breaking moment where they actually discuss it with the parents. Say, yeah, mom, I know you want me to be an engineer, but I'm actually, you know, the report here says I'm actually good at artistic kind of subject. So those are some of the software that we've developed to help our students, to aid our students. And we also have tutors who are educational psychologists, of course, and students tutors who have done courses in just helping students with special needs, you know, special education. So you'd find a special education tutor in a certain condition like epilepsy or autism. You know, they are able to teach a student in a way that is scientifically proven for their condition.
Yeah. Tawo Katola is my guest. He is South African, doing great things. Founder and CEO of Lion Tutoring International. Do you think that education is going through a general overhaul? I ask this question because I sometimes look at the fact that we've got schools, institutions, you know, with lots of classes, staff, teachers, learners, and so forth. We've got universities, big, beautiful buildings with labs and teachers and very clever people teaching. And at the same time, we are seeing this reality of the fourth industrial revolution. People can go and literally get their degrees at sitting at home with a laptop. And I'm talking about online education here.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting the sense that we need to find different ways of teaching? And that maybe some of the ways that we have been teaching are now coming to a place where they're reaching their sell-by date?
Yeah, absolutely. And But Obza, COVID has really opened our eyes to that, because during those lockdowns, we're all sitting at home. And I always tell this to people that I consult with, that the mere fact that our students were able to sit home behind a computer and have an online classroom and still graduate. There were actually students that graduated in those lockdowns that still had one or two semesters that they just sat home and had to study at home.
Yeah.
And we've seen that as possible. So the overhaul is really possible. And actually a lot of parents,
I'm arguing that it's not just possible, I think it's happening.
It's happening.
I'm watching it. Lion Tutoring International. It's happening. It's happening quietly and in smaller incidents, right? But I think that there is an educational revolution taking place in the world right now.
Yeah,
that is happening just very quietly.
Quietly,
but it's happening.
It is happening.
Yep.
Yeah. And you see, even the other disruption to this is, who says your child has to take 7 years in primary and 4 to 5 years in high school?
Yeah,
I had a 13-year-old who wrote his A levels and passed really well and got university admission. 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And you know where the problem was? He can only get into university after turning 18. So what are we going to do with those 5 years, you know? And, you know, it's now that the online courses are actually allowing even less students who are less than 18-year-old to get onto online classrooms.
And that's what I'm talking about, to say that the old ways of education, the modalities, the models that we use, the institutions we use, are not working with the innovations that are now available.
Yeah.
So here's a 13-year-old who's passed their A-levels, 13, is ready perhaps to challenge some of the university material, but can't, because there's a law that says you've got to be 18.
You have to be 18 to make it onto campus.
I'm going to get into trouble. But I'm going to ask that question.
Okay.
How is the conventional educational space receiving guys like you with innovation in education and the way that you're attacking the education system? Yeah.
We're always not the most popular.
Yeah.
Especially schools. Especially universities. There's actually a memo that was sent in one of the private schools that we have a lot of students in.
Yeah.
A lot, I mean 50 plus, that please avoid using private tutors because they might be misaligned to the work that we're doing. And I promise you, students were getting 30 plus increment in their marks within three months. 30 plus percent. So if a student was getting 50%, within 3 months they're already getting that 80%. So and the good thing about technology is we have the data. We store the data, the before tutoring, the after tutoring, which students, which schools the students are going to, which curricula. So we've got the data to say the students are improving, but because the school wants to keep an extra 2 or 3 years of the student on campus to make that money. We're going to get in trouble.
But
that is unfortunately what is happening. And that is why we're the most unpopular, because of the disruptions that we're making in certain neighborhoods. But it works for the parent. You know, when you disrupt, you will be the most unpopular. It works for the student. It works for the parent. It even works for the school in the long run. But they are looking at the short run to say, I can keep a student 2 years extra in a school. Or even after school, you know, students are kept for after school tutoring programs in school. So if a student didn't learn the first 5 hours of school in the morning, what guarantee is that extra 2 hours you're keeping them, they will learn that the school will actually bill for more?
Course, and are you finding that students are are gravitating more and more towards the tutoring kind of thing versus the conventional schooling situation? Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, with our program, we have both options where we have homeschooling programs where parents would just remove the child from school
altogether. Yeah,
altogether.
Yep.
Then we have the tutoring. And as I say, with the tutoring, it helps everyone. If I'm a teacher and I'm teaching the student a certain topic for 5 hours and I expect that tomorrow I'm moving to the next topic, if majority of the class still doesn't get that topic, I'm going to be building on, you know, confusion. But if a tutor has come up, unpacked the work from that topic, the teacher even enjoys to see that the homework has been done, the student understands the previous topic. I can now confidently move to the next topic. Okay, now you're talking of money.
I'm sure you guys are expensive.
We're not as expensive as our other competitors because we are quite new kids on the block.
Right.
So we're reasonably priced. And most of the cost also is just to get the tutor to the right place at the right time. We don't want to keep the student waiting.
Yep.
And because the tutor has to now drive across town. But, you know, we want to put the fuel for the tutors. We want to take care of our tutors so that they can be able to deliver.
We'll talk about costs in a few moments' time. Look, you're a business, right? So you,
yes.
So you know, we've got to keep that in mind. So we'll have that conversation. Talk to me about the homeschooling space and the thinking behind that.
Yeah.
You know, I have an 8-year-old and a 11-year-old that are live wires, bro. Those people. Live wires.
That's nice.
Are on all the time.
Mm.
They're not doing badly at school, but they hate school.
Mm.
They hate school with a passion. I can see it.
Yeah.
And usually I argue that I hated school too. But there are options now.
Yeah.
Right? Why would I want to homeschool my child?
Right, there's a host of reasons. The most common that I've seen with our students is expatriates, you know, some diplomats would be in South Africa for maybe two or 3 years. Then they would move to France 2 or 3 years, move to another country. So having a homeschooling program, actually, it works for them, especially if these international curricula like your Cambridge or IB, you know, they're able to move from one place to other. And the good thing with our program is we are able to switch between the live session, so the in-person tutoring and the online tutoring. So if they were to move to another country, we'd just continue with the same tutors online. So that is one. Two, we've seen with most students who parents didn't want them to take certain vaccines. We saw over the pandemic that they'd say, we're going to vaccinate the children, and whichever student is not vaccinated can't make it onto campus. But, you know, people have religious beliefs. They have their beliefs around also the vaccines and the effectiveness of vaccines. They would homeschool their kids. Some kids were also victim to certain bullying. Some of the cases, I actually don't advocate for them to be removed from school, because they need to experience that bullying. They need to because it's the real world. Yeah. These the healthy and the unhealthy. I'm not a psychologist, but with our teams who are in psychology, I've actually got to learn that even bullying, children need to know how to deal with it, but in a healthy environment.
Sure.
And there are some ways actually overly unbearable that you'd have to remove your child altogether from school and have them homeschool. So those are some of the cases that we've seen. In your case, if the kids are not interested, we need to sit down with them and find out, why are you not interested in going to school?
Because they're waking up in the morning.
Yeah. So that they still have
that
to
experience. That they get from their father.
They have to experience that they need to. That is the real life.
Yeah.
They're one day going
to wake up in the morning,
go to their businesses, or if they're employed, go to their workplace. So there are some issues that I wouldn't advocate for it, but there are some issues where I'd say, remove your child altogether from school. Let's homeschool them.
And Monica on our WhatsApp line says, tell your guests that sometimes disruption is necessary for restoration. Mamuruti, amen, Mamuruti, man. Hey, man. Amen, Mamuruti.
We have to X that,
Mamuruti is taking us to church. And then, good evening, Aubrey. Please ask your guests to do they have vacancies available, Han, and how do they apply? We'll talk about that. I want to talk about cost, and then I want to talk about vacancies and how people can get into plugged into this career path of being a tutor.
Yeah.
What do you need to know? What sort of qualifications do you need to have to be perhaps employed by Lion Tutoring International?
Yeah, so we have a whole host of professionals. You'd have guys who have their engineering, law degrees, accountant degrees, but we still require them to do a postgraduate, either diploma or certificate in education. Because, you know, being an engineer doesn't mean you know how to teach engineering.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of those. And then we have tutors who have done their bachelor's in education or their master's in education.
Yeah.
So those are the people sort of eligible. And I myself, I graduated, as I said, in economics and business, but I still did a postgraduate certificate in education. And I had experience from tutoring at the university.
Right.
So even just the experience. And we take our tutors through background checks, eh? So the same way, you know, your Uber drivers take their fingerprints and run them through FSwitch, we do the same thing with our tutors.
Very important.
Yeah, because we're sending them to your house.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Children, and also sending the tutors to your house. So we obviously, that's the way that we minimize our risk. And so far, we really haven't had much incidents.
Your business is operating in many countries now, not only here in South Africa, Botswana, and so forth. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we have our business running here in South Africa, Johannesburg, Pretoria, Cape Town, and in Botswana. And with the online tutoring, we have students in Brazil and Italy. Yeah, we didn't expect that, but...
Hence the Lion Tutoring International.
Yeah.
Excellent.
The online tutoring has done wonders for us.
It's so lekker, man.
Baie lekker.
It's lekker. It's lekker, lekker.
Yeah.
No, I love it, brother. I love it. I tell you from the bottom of my heart, we need to see this kind of thing. We need to see innovation. We need to see boldness. Mm-hmm. We need to go all over the world and make a contribution.
Absolutely.
So I want to salute you for that. So how does a person who wants to actually be a part of your organization become a tutor?
Yeah. So on our website, www.liontutorinternational.com, there are two buttons. The first one is get a tutor. The second one is become a tutor. So both of them, these are form that you'd fill out. Then it will give you further instructions. So as if you are at become a tutor, you'd obviously fill out your personal details, get an opportunity to attach your certificates, etc. And then if you qualify, would obviously book an interview with you. And if we don't have your fingerprints, we'd obviously ask you to get your fingerprints, run your data through the police. And we actually have a third party HR agency that helps us with all of that. So once everything is done, you'll be part of our tutors. And our tutors earn anything from 0 to 20,000 rands in a month. And also our price on the pricing side, we charge clients anything from 900 rand to 6,000, 7,000 rands, depending on the packages they select. So some of the parents actually cut costs by deploying the tutor to the institution. So you'd find like some schools, they would allow the tutor to come onto campus and then they would be tutored there. So it's actually shorter for them to go to the student's campus as opposed to their house. But there are some that would actually want the tutor to come all the way to their house, and the pricing is different for that.
Ducky, the tutor says, Aubrey, what an inspiring tale. Ducky, you're a tutor. Give me a call, man. What are some of the issues perhaps that we could hear from or glean from your experience? Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? I grew up in Botswana.
Yeah.
Botswana. So that's where I did most of my schooling, and I came here to South Africa for my tertiary schooling.
Yeah.
But you know, we have roots within the Southern African region.
Yeah.
My grandfather was from Lesotho.
Yeah.
And most of our family members are based here in South Africa. Mafikeng.
Right.
You know,
Maftown.
Maftown. You know.
Yeah. The land of Botswana. tell me about your plans for the rest of the continent. I mean, I think that this is something that is, and of course, the rest of the world, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're already doing Brazil and so forth.
Yeah.
What's your vision for the continent?
You know, Africa is such a beautiful continent. I got the privilege of traveling to Senegal last year for the United Nations AFCFTA conference.
Yeah.
And we got to meet with West Africans, East Africans, North Africans and South African, Central Africans. And it was such an amazing experience to see that our continent really wants solutions by us, for us, by us.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to export
all the
curriculum,
yeah, yeah,
export the books, export this and that.
Make stuff of our own experience.
We need to take it, actually export to them, you know, not import all the time, you know, import the curricula. And actually one of the conversations I had with the guys in Senegal is that they do a lot of French history and they should be doing Senegalese history instead of the history of, you know, the French countries. And most of us in our countries, you know, we're studying history from our colonizers, you know, but we should be studying our own South African history, you know, how we came to where we are now.
Sure,
so
sure.
Those are some
one of the big things that the Fees Must Fall movement pointed out to us was what they call the imposter syndrome. Feeling like a stranger in your own country because we do things that are not ours, that don't speak to our reality. I was had a chuckle with my son's teacher when he was doing a little project and it was speaking about tigers and bears. And I said, do you realize that we don't have tigers and bears here? He said, yeah. But you get the principle. I said, yes, but could we not make the same point with hippopotamus and a rhino? or a lion and a leopard? I mean, the same principle, the same. Yeah. And just bring it closer so that it's more relatable. And we had that conversation. And I think that there was an agreement that we do need to make things speak more to our realities in the various degrees that they need to be. So that's great. My brother, I want to stand up and salute you for the work that you're doing. Thobo Katola, founder and CEO of Lion Tutoring International. I think you need to understand that the work that you are doing is critical. It is the kind of work that is going to help us understand ourselves better, contribute to our communities and countries more in a more relevant way, and in that way allow us to contribute to the civilization of the globe. I want to thank you so much for the work that you've done founding the Lion Tutoring International. How do people get in touch with you?
Oh, thank you so much. So people can get in touch with me directly. My WhatsApp number is 0737 759305. I'll repeat
to us again.
0737 759305. So I've got a team of salespeople, 30 or 40 sales guys, but I normally like to deal with customers firsthand, so that I can direct you to the right person, to the right tutor, etc. And then on all socials is at Lion Tutoring. We're also on TikTok, you know, doing the dance challenges with the kids.
Right.
Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn.